Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Grant Schneider, the outgoing Chief Information Officer at the Defense Intelligence Agency. Grant, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. I appreciate being here and talking to you again.
It was big news a couple months back now, and maybe even longer, that you announced or you decided that you're going to move on from DIA. So when is your last day? And then we're going to ask about what comes next for you.
My last day is October 3rd, and then I'll be moving on to do something different.
All right. Well, tell us what that is, because I was under the impression you were going to retire, not that you're that old that you need to move on and retire, but I thought maybe you were leaving government. My understanding now that you're not leaving government.
No, I'm not leaving government. I am actually going to go on a rotational or a joint duty assignment. So I will still be on DIA's books, but I'm going to be assigned over inside of the Office of Management and Budget, inside the e-government and information technology organization for a two-year assignment over there.
All right. Very cool. It's an office I spend a lot of time with, so I'm sure we will get to run into each other at the assorted federal community events. Give me a sense of what are you going to be doing for them? Do you know yet?
I'm going to be a senior cyber advisor in the organization, and what we've discussed so far from a portfolio standpoint is really going to be focused on a little bit of oversight from a continuous diagnostic monitoring standpoint, and also I'm guessing it's going to be more of the time focused on identity management and really of the broader kind of federal.gov or unclassified space, and really getting the stakeholders together, charting a course and direction on how we're going to do identity management across the federal government, and then start making progress and traction in the direction we select or that we recommend and others select.
All right. There's a lot of fertile ground there. I know that talking to the folks over at GSA in the past and following the Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, HSPD 12, very closely over the past decade, I know that there's been some progress. I know there could be more progress. And then with the evolution of mobile devices and such, there's even a different way to do identity management. So I know you'll keep busy. But I want to talk about your time at DIA. Start with what made you decide to move on from DIA. Obviously, you've been at the CIO for some time, and you've been in the intelligence community for probably, I'm guessing, most of your career.
I have been at DIA for about 22 years now, so a long time. And I've been in the CIO position for a little over 7 years. And really, over the last probably 12 to 18 months, I started having conversations with our director and our deputy director about, you know, what's the next thing for me to do, recognizing that at the end of 7 years, it's time to do something different. It's been a great 7 years, and I kind of view my time in the CIO in three increments. I mean, I've probably always moved more every 2 to 3 years, but the CIO job's kind of been refreshed every 2 or so years while I've been there. And really, it was just that, you know, we're on a good path with iSight and all the things, the intelligence community information technology enterprise, and all the stuff we're doing with the intelligence community and the DNI, and there's time for me to do something different.
And it's way different in many regards. I mean, I know cyber was a big deal for you to go to OMB, and it was a big deal at DIA, but this is not another CIO role. It's not like you're moving from DIA to NSA CIO or something where, you know, maybe it's a bigger agency or at least more prominent agency in some regards. What made you want to go in the civilian side?
Well, I won't argue whether NSA is more prominent than DIA.
Well, that was not a loaded question, you know.
What I looked at is really what was the portfolio I wanted to work on. And you know, I've been in IT the vast majority of my career. I am passionate about IT, and I'm really passionate about cybersecurity. And one of the things that sort of looking at the landscape of what we're doing, I took a step back and said, where can I help apply my skills to problems that I think are big for our nation? And quite frankly, cybersecurity in the unclassified space, I think is huge. It's an area that, as you mentioned, there's some fertile ground to be worked on. And if we don't get some of that right, I just think as a nation, truly our national security is going to be at risk if we can't get our security shored up in our unclassified domains and our ability to share information at all different levels across the government.
How big of a change is it for you to go to a civilian side? I mean, cybersecurity is still very much in the classified realm. You spend a lot of time on classified networks. The learning curve to go to the unclassified side is, I'm guessing, it's probably not that big of a learning curve.
I think from a content standpoint, the learning curve will be less so, will be minimal. I think from the number of stakeholders and all the different points of view and the different perspectives and a lot of the different missions, which are going to be really new for me when you start talking whole of government. A, everything becomes, you know, just more people in the room, more people who have a say, and most everyone's got a good reason to do something, and many people have a good reason not to do something. And I think working through all those are really going to be the learning curve. It's just the operating environment is going to be very different than what I've had at DIA.
Well, you seem to do pretty well with the tough environment within the intelligence community, 17 different agencies, all very headstrong in their own right. So that's probably good training for the civilian world, which, you know, definitely will have its challenges and stuff you'll get to enjoy. Moving out of the intelligence community, are you going to miss it? I mean, you'll still be connected to it through cybersecurity, but not having that day in, day out, is that the biggest thing you're going to maybe miss at moving out of DIA?
Very different. I know a number of the people who work in and operate in the broader federal space. However, most of what I know is inside the intelligence community. I'm used to leaving my cell phone at the front door when I go to work or go into really any building. And so I think it's going to be a big culture shock to me to just be in an environment that isn't shrouded in, you know, and immersed in the idea of security, because everyone in the intelligence community, we kind of think that as a second nature. And I think that's going to be a big change on the federal side.
It's funny because when you talk about bringing your cell phone into the office, all of a sudden, you know, your family, your friends are going to be able to call you during the day and reach out to you to, you know, ask something, you know, and that is in itself a change. But in many ways, dealing with cybersecurity and all that goes with that, that's not going to be a huge change either. I know we talked a little bit about the learning curve, but leaving DIA, do you end up with the opportunities that going to OMB opens? Is that something that you kind of weighed against the work you've done at DIA as opposed to staying in the intelligence community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything's I looked at and weighed sort of what were the areas I wanted to be involved in, where did I think I could bring my skills to bear. You know, I will still be associated with and in contact with the intelligence community. And, you know, at the end of 2 years, I'll likely be back in the IC in some way, shape, or form. However, I think sort of having an out-of-body experience will be really helpful for just the way that I look at, even when I go back into the intelligence community, the way I look at the way we operate, the way our systems are designed, and the way we have to interface with broader customers across the 17 intelligence community elements, as well as all the other folks that are intelligence consumers in some way, shape, or form.
Very good. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your career at DIA. My guest today is Grant Schneider, the outgoing CIO at the Defense Intelligence Agency. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Grant Schneider, the outgoing CIO at the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, Grant, before break, we talked a lot about your new role, how that's going to change, moving from a strictly IC role to a more civilian-focused role. But I want to talk more about your time, your 22 years in career at DIA. Talk a little bit about some professional highlights that you know, really stand out to you over the last, you know, two decades plus.
When I first got into DIA, I landed in the JWICS, Joint Worldwide Intelligence Communications System Program Office. And JWICS, I think many of your listeners are aware, is essentially the top secret internet for the intelligence community, for the military intelligence community, and really the broader government. And when I got into that office, we were planning, there were three sites installed, and we were planning on having 9 sites. And they were only going to have video going over. So this was early 90s, and it was really about BTC so that, quite frankly, admirals and generals could talk to one another and carry on classified conversations without having to travel. And as it expanded, really my first year in the organization, we ended up adding data services, took over a data network that existed. And that was kind of the growth of what we know as JWICS today, which is voice, video, and data services around the world that allows collaboration in a variety of different mediums for our intelligence analysts and intelligence customers. And one of the things that was great when I was in that organization is while I was assigned to DIA and DIA headquarters, I was really focused on the combatant command field elements. So my customers weren't in the DIA headquarters building. I was a bit of an anomaly, and I got a broad exposure into really how the military intelligence community and some of the broader IC, but more focused on the military intelligence, operate globally, what the missions and functions are, how important it was for their ability to collaborate at both the combatant command and kind of the component command and different, whether it's numbered air forces or Marine Expeditionary Forces or other elements to be able to really interoperate.
So that was, obviously you said you first got in. What an experience to jump in, you know, kind of fresh out of, were you in the military or fresh out of college?
No, I was fresh out of college.
So what an experience to jump into that. Now, you came out of college probably with a computer engineering degree or some sort of engineering degree. How did you land up at DIA? Was it just, did you apply or how did that work out?
I came out of college with a math degree because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do something in science or engineering, and I figured math was flexible enough that I could go in a variety of directions. While I was in school, I actually knew someone, had a friend that was in the military, worked at DIA, and gave me a little bit of exposure, and I applied, and I kind of came in right at the tail end of when we were hiring, because shortly after I came into the agency, you know, all the peace dividends of the 90s started to come. And really, it was kind of interesting because we didn't hire many more people for another 6-8 years. So, you know, for the longest time, I was one of the youngest people in the agency just as time evolved.
So now that you're there, you get to jump in and do this kind of cool program with JWICS. Talk a little bit about how you moved up the ranks to become the CIO, because as you said, your background is math, not necessarily computer engineering or even computer science.
One of the things when I was first in the JWICS office, I started getting into and became kind of our financial officer as well. So I got into acquisitions and procurements and how the budget worked. And that was something that really stayed with me kind of for another decade, where most of my jobs inside of DIA, and I ended up being a little more internally focused for a while, but all of them had an element of IT and an element of financial management. And I could kind of translate between the two, and I could explain both finance world and the IT world to our customers and to leadership. And then in 2003, I got promoted to the senior executive service, actually into a financial management role. So I was the budget guy for the IT organization at the time. And then shortly after that, my predecessor came in as the CIO, pulled me back down into an IT operations role, so out of the finance role and back into truly running day-to-day IT operations, which I did for a couple of years. And then after Mike Kluger, my predecessor, retired, I applied for and was fortunate enough to be selected as the CIO.
A finance guy in the CIO role, all the techies listening to my show, their hearts are pattering, they're getting chest pains because, you know, the CFO people and the CIO people traditionally don't get along. But that must really have helped you over the years to understand that not just the tech side, but really the finance side, because a lot of times there's that push and pull where the money's coming from, where is it going? Can you kind of give me a sense of how that's helped you over the years?
It's huge. And I would tell all the CIOs or budding CIOs out there, the CFO is your best friend. And if the CFO is not your best friend, make them your best friend and learn how they think. Because the financial processes in the government, they flow no matter what decision we want to make. So they don't. The finance people don't care that a new software release is about to come out in a month. They want to know what you're going to spend today. And so understanding the business operations of the business is absolutely critical. And for me, has really been a benefit in my career to be able to kind of take a step back at the corporate level, if you will, from a DIA perspective, and understand what is the business need. Because one of the CIO's, you know, key jobs or key roles is being able to make IT investments that bring the biggest business punch. And if you don't understand the mission and what your customers are trying to accomplish, and if you don't understand the financial realities that you have to operate within, then those are absolutely necessary in order to make good decisions.
If you could just give me a sense of when did this come into play for you over the last maybe 3, 5, 7 years? When did knowing the budget side, especially as DIA and all of DOD really went through sequestration and the budget reductions and the tightening of the budget, give me an example of when that helped you, knowing that finance side really came into play as a CIO.
One of the things when I first became the CIO, DIA had just basically done a merger, if you will, with the IT elements within the combatant command J2 organizations. So at each of the combatant commands, the J2 had their own IT shop that really provisioned their local desktop JWRC services for the most part, and a few other capabilities. And so right before I came on board as the CIO, we had merged those people and their budgets into DIA and said DIA is going to be the service provider for that. At the same time, there was a push to say in doing that, we should save a whole bunch of money. So I walked into a budget that was already programmatically getting smaller than the one I started with and the one that was being expended, you know, to provide those services. And quite frankly, you know, my 7 years in the DIA CIO have really been a push and a mandate on being more efficient and being effective. However, it was definitely a drive towards how can you provide the best possible IT capabilities at the most affordable price. And so much of what we've done over the last few years has been focused on budget. As sequestration came along, quite frankly, I sent half my contractors home in the last 18 months. So I was 60% contractors, half of my contractors we've had to send home. In order to meet the budget. However, I would say the first half of the half, if you will, that we sent home have really been, we changed operating models, we changed our service delivery model, and we were able to find efficiencies in the system and change the way we did business in order to offset that. Certainly, there's some agility that we've lost and some risk we've put into the system. However, you know, without that understanding of what the budget people were expecting, I wouldn't have been able to make those decisions in a manner that maintained our customer service.
Wow. So go through that again. You had looked at all your contractors and you had to send about half of your contractors home, meaning you had to change the way you did business and change the way you contracted out. So 60% were sent, or go through that numbers again.
At one point in time, 60% of my workforce were contractors. So I have military and civilians and contractors, and we sent 50% of the contractor folks home over the last 18 months. And as you said, it was absolutely a change in our operating model, which when we took over the folks in the field, the combatant command elements, and became their service provider, we were still very distributed. We had email servers at every command location. We had email servers, you know, spread throughout the world. And along with those servers and that hardware, we had systems administrators to administer all that equipment. So as we were able to consolidate our domains, if you will, on particularly on the JWIC side, into one common DOTIS, Department of Defense Intelligence Information Systems, one DOTIS domain, we were able to do a lot of consolidation of our hardware footprint and therefore consolidation of the contractor resources we needed. So we switched from where I have folks out in the field that are my customer liaisons, if you will. And, you know, 5 years ago, the customer liaisons were also the boss of the IT people on site that were part of my organization, and they would do what I called regional service delivery. So they would turn to their local staff, they would deliver IT services. What we shifted to in about 2010 was a global delivery. So rather than being able to just have a local person that could do everything, we had to reach across the globe to find the resources as we were downsizing and as we knew we were going to have to send people home to really change to a global delivery model where email is kind of a service. It gets delivered from someplace far away from the customers as opposed to, you know, in the basement of every building where I've got customers at.
I think that's a fascinating because I think a lot of CIOs, as I talk to them throughout the government, are facing that same challenge of having a pretty sizable contractor workforce. And how do you balance out the need for contractors, but also the need, the fact is, you can't do what you could always do before. The enterprise services are changing the way the workforce is set up. In some ways, have you had to change, instead of those systems administrators, have you had to move and shift to other types of capabilities and skills in your workforce?
Two aspects of that, Jason, that we've had to do. One is that we've had to contract differently. So we've moved to more performance-based. My service desk, you know, when I got into this job, we had 17 help desks around the world. We now have one. It's got two physical locations and one number. And all my customers globally call that, whether they're in a defense attaché office in Beijing, they're in Kabul, or they're in Washington, D.C., they all call the same number. And 7 years ago, we probably did about 20 or 25% of our tickets, our phone calls that we could solve on the phone. This week, we're at 74%. So 74% of the people that call in, their problem gets solved while they're on the phone, which, so that's another part of the, you know, changing the way we deliver the services to the customer. They don't always see all our people. However, they should be able to reach out and get the service. The other piece, and this is one that we're still working on, quite frankly, is the civilian and military skill set and workforce management. So we've also, over the last 2 years, 2.5 years, put more emphasis on our military and really paid attention to moving some of our military billets around so our military people can provide levels of service. And quite frankly, they can do that in some overseas locations where they're a little less expensive for me than having a civilian or certainly a contractor. And then the other piece that that we're focused on is the skill mix that my civilian workforce needs. When we did a reorganization, we tweaked our reorganization about a year ago, and about 30% of my civilian managers' management positions we eliminated. And so we were, in order to put those people kind of back into to doing more functions, if you will, as opposed to management functions. However, that's a very different skill set by the time you became a fairly senior civilian, now back to being a doer again. And so we're really now focused on, you know, what is the training we need to do? How do we manage the careers? Because it's a different career path than it was 5 years ago inside of the DIACIO organization.
I think that's fascinating. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about that civilian and military workforce. My guest today is Grant Schneider, the outgoing CIO at the Defense Intelligence Agency. I'm Jason Miller, your host, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's outgoing Chief Information Officer. Now, Grant, before break, we're talking a little bit about skill sets and training and stuff and the changing nature of your workforce. Offer just a little bit more, if you can, about what types of skill sets were needed. How big of a change was this? Because, again, I think as agencies move to the cloud, and as agencies change the way they support technology, whether it's through virtualization or zero clients or thin clients and the like, their workforce is changing too. I'm hearing a lot, we need more data scientists and less systems administrators as one main example. So how has your workforce changed?
There's really two driving factors, and you mentioned the technology one, and then obviously the change in the reductions in contractors is the other one. So from an efficiency standpoint, you know, I used to have a lot of people that were project managers, and they manage lots of contractors, and now there's fewer contractors for us to be managing, and I need people that are able to do the work. And at the same time, the nature of the work is changing. You mentioned data scientists. That is going to be a huge draw, I think, in the federal government, I think in the private sector as well, for people that really understand how to manage, how to leverage, how to secure, how to share and manipulate data, whether it's what we call big data or whether it's other data sources and sets, that we're going to have to be able to do that. We also need more people who have some of that deep subject matter expertise in different technologies, whether it is some of the infrastructure stuff and networks and things that we had contracted out. Certainly computer network defense is a biggie. Again, it's a big one across the board where we need to be sure we've got enough organic in-house expertise in some of those areas, and it's certainly a challenge. You know, as we move towards cloud technologies and as we move in the intelligence community towards ISITE, it really changes the way that all the CIOs are going to deliver IT capabilities because, you know, historically the DIA CIO has been the provider for all the services within to DIA customers, and now, you know, under ISITE, I'm a provider of services to other agencies, and this is, I think, the part that's culturally different for us, I'm a consumer of services. So if I'm going to get cloud services from someone else, those are skills I don't need. However, I need to understand enough to get my applications to be cloud ready and able to run and operate in those sorts of environments.
When you went through your workforce to say we need fewer project managers and maybe more cybersecurity people or more people who understand cloud, did you end up having to do some training and some new hiring? Did you have people shifting in and out? Because again, as you said, people who rose up through the ranks and they were managers for so long and now they're doers, that is a big change for them. And some people don't want that change.
You know, it's a mixed bag. Some people are thrilled. Some people are thrilled to get out of the management ranks, and some people aren't. And so, however, for both of them, we've needed to do training. And so some of that has been different types of training, commercial training. I would say we haven't done enough in that area, and we're actually looking to step up our training program as actually DIA's stepping up our training programs and recognition of what we need for our workforce across the board. And we're tailoring more towards the IT folks of, you know, what they need to do and what they need to understand. And then anytime, you know, we can get, you know, free training, whether it's from a vendor or from something we purchased or from a service that we're in the middle of, we try to get people into that as much as possible.
All right. It's good to hear, because I think the recognition of training sometimes is missed across the government, and that's a shame for especially the IT folks. Previously, you mentioned iSight a couple times. We got to catch up on that program. That's a big one for not just DIA, but for the entire intelligence community. DIA is playing a big role in the iSight program. What's the status of both the DIA role in iSight? And if you just give me the more general, where is iSight today?
From a DIA standpoint, the biggest role that we're playing right now is DIA and NGA, you may recall, are partnered together to be the IC desktop environment service provider. And so we've been working for a couple of years on delivering what we are calling phase one of the desktop environment. We started that about a year ago, but really a year ago we sort of had our first accounts on board, people transitioned in, and then really this summer we had a big push to be able to transition people into the environment. We just last week went over 10,000 customers on the DTE environment. That's between DIA and NGA, so we're really excited about that. We will, in 15, probably in calendar year 15, we'll do a few more transitions here at the end of FY14, well, in calendar year 14, excuse me, and then in calendar year 15, we will be transitioning the rest of the DIA and NGA populations. So we'll go from having about 10,000 people on to getting closer to 40 or 50,000 people, which are a variety of customers of DIA and NGA, if you will. So we'll be doing those transitions moving forward. So really excited about that. And then one of the things I think we talked about last time was our phase two endeavor for the desktop, which is a competitive contract, and that is in source selection, so I can't say anything about it. However, we are looking for a relatively early calendar year 15 award for the phase two contract. Once we bring that on board, we will be able to start transitioning people from other agencies. And so we're really looking forward to being able to broaden to the rest of the intelligence community.
Moving to a standard desktop like you're talking about, in a shared desktop between DIA and NGA, and you said about 10,000 people are on it now, what challenges are you facing? Obviously, it's working, which is good news, but are you finding that as you're moving more and more people on it, things that are popping up that maybe you didn't plan well enough for, or that you realized were going to happen and now actually are happening? Give me a sense of how it's gone so far.
You know, started out that we were in more of a discovery mode of finding problems, and really I put our problems into three categories. As we migrate customers, and we started out relatively slowly and then we got quicker at it, we were finding problems that we knew we could go fix systemically. So some engineering work, and we would go work on them and fix them, and then we would do another round of migrations, and hopefully that was solved. And if it wasn't exactly solved or we found new ones, we'd work through those. The second one were we found some problems that, quite frankly, we weren't sure what to do about. And so then we were able to prepare so that when we did the next round of migrations, we were prepared to at least, you know, clean up those issues if we couldn't prevent them in the first place. And then the third one, and this one's been kind of interesting, is the things we need our customers to do for us. You know, there's a lot of things because we're actually bringing everyone's legacy email with them. They get a new account, new password, whole new environment, but we're bringing a whole bunch of legacy historical info with them. They have to be able to reach back into their home agency legacy business systems and HR systems and et cetera. And there's stuff they need to do to bring in their PKI certificates, printing out their new password, always my favorite that seems 20-some% of the people don't do. And so, you know, the lessons learned fall into those three categories, and every iteration we do, it changes some. And I would say we're really rapidly approaching the point where we've solved most of the things we can solve systemically. There's very few items that we can't solve and we have to deal with. And now a lot of it's about, you know, customer interaction and making sure that the customers understand, you know, what they need to do and how to make it, what they can do to help make it a smooth transition for them.
What you basically just said is the old change management. That's always the biggest challenge. How has that been from a DIA, NGA?
It's interesting because DIA and NGA, we are both in the service provider role of the desktop to the community, and we're in a service consumer role for our individual agencies. And so not every single requirement that everyone has today in their legacy domains is going to make it into the community solution. So there is a little bit of, I like mine being a little more unique or a little more special, and we have to provide something that's actually going to work across the entire IC, and sometimes those are a little incongruent. At the customer standpoint, I would say we get pushed back before people migrate, you know, and during the migration, there's always a few hiccups and bumps and some spikes and tickets. However, you know, when we go back and do surveys a couple of weeks and months later, which we continuously do, you know, by and large, the customers are happy. They're able to meet their mission and get their jobs done. And really, as we get the rest of the DIA and NGA agencies on board, I think we'll, you know, a lot of those, because a lot of the concerns people have are being able to reach back into legacy environments. And so once you hit that tipping point where most of the people are in the new environment, I think those will go away as well or be reduced.
Well, at least you hope so. And you'll be able to watch it from afar from your new role at OMB. We're going to take a quick break. My guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's outgoing Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller, your host. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest today is Grant Schneider, the Defense Intelligence Agency's outgoing Chief Information Officer. Now, Grant, we spent a lot early part of the show talking about some of the things you worked on, some of your favorite parts of being at DIA, but the role of CIO has changed a whole lot over the last, you know, decade or more, and you've been in that role of CIO for at least 7 years, and you've probably been watching the role a little bit longer. As you talked about your career, you got pulled into the CIO's office without much notice, per se. Talk a little bit about how your role as the CIO has changed, and where is it going next?
You know, CIOs in different organizations certainly have different roles. For DIA, where I'm fortunate enough to kind of run our mission applications and our business applications and our enterprise applications, as well as having the governance oversight piece, what's changed the most, though, for me has been when I first came in, it was very internally DIA-focused, and it was mostly about operations, with some focus on business applications and mission applications. And actually, when I first came in, a lot of those were done within the mission functional areas or the business functional areas. You know, over the years, we've consolidated more IT into the CIO shop, so we've brought on those different portfolios. And then the other piece has been really the community exposure. You know, I think all different federal agencies are more interconnected to other agencies inside the IC, outside the IC, and that ability to focus more broadly has really changed in the last few years, in my opinion.
Obviously, I think you would agree it's for the better, the fact that the more externally focused inside, outside the IC, because it's the idea that one head is good, multiple brains are much better. Are you getting that sense that CIOs not only enjoy that interaction, but now need it?
Absolutely. You know, my workforce works with people from across the community. They learn from people across the community. When we first started doing it, there was probably a lot of not invented here. And now it's, hey, how can we collaborate and come up with the best idea? And that certainly makes all of us better and all of us more effective and all of us more efficient. So definitely a good thing to have that broader view. And I think it's made the CIO role far more of a player at the corporate board, whatever the agency equivalent is of a corporate board. But again, be able to understand that what's the impact of these IT role on the mission and on the business.
Looking forward now you're going to be stepping out of the CIO role, but you're still going to have a strong glimpse into it. Where should it go next? You know, if I'm a CIO or if I'm going to be a CIO, what should I know in terms of where this role is morphing into the next generation?
I think one of the things we're going to see is really a push towards focus on risk management. And I think businesses, and cyber is a big play of that, although cyber is, you know, in our world, it's broader than just the IT. However, I think the CIO is going to be, you know, one of the corporate risk managers, and being able to help agency heads and agency directors and, you know, other leadership folks to be able to make business decisions and risk decisions, and basically bring all those together from an investment portfolio standpoint. And so I think that's kind of the, you know, we've sort of been focused on the mission and the IT and the money, and I think we're going to bring in that risk management piece going forward.
In a lot of ways, what you just described was something OMB has been pushing, this administration has been pushing, which is portfolio stat, where, you know, they had tech stat, and now they're looking at portfolio stat to say not just the technology of it, but really that whole, what's the risk inside that portfolio. Is that something that within DIA you guys are doing from the risk management perspective?
Moving that way to be able to understand how does this affect, you know, second and third order elements. One of the things we did inside of DIA is, as I came up through the ranks, every office had a budget, and then every division had a budget, and every whatever had a budget, and now there's just one CIO budget. And so my leadership team has to collaborate and work together and make those business risk-based decisions on where we're going to make investments, where we're going to make trade-offs, and where we're going to make reductions. I mean, it's a very different way of looking at it. However, I think as a holistic view, it's absolutely required moving forward.
Now, it seems like from the way you've been talking over the last 40 minutes during our show here, is that you have a seat at the table, which is what CIOs have been asking for, demanding, and a lot of people have been saying in the community they need to have. Do you feel like the seat at the table from DIA you were listened to, you were a strategic partner, not just the guy who made the BlackBerrys work?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think it's certainly in my 20-plus years at DIA, I've watched it ebb and flow a little bit. But in my time in the tenure, it has certainly been something that my agency directors have recognized, the criticality of IT to do everything else that we do as an organization as an entity. So I've always felt that I had a seat at the table, that our input was valued, whether it was about IT or about any other element of the business of DIA.
Very interesting. I think that, you know, as more CIOs work toward that, I think they want to be in a position that you're in. Being the CIO for 7 years, you saw a lot of change. You saw a lot of good things, a lot of bad things. What was your favorite part about being the CIO at the Defense Intelligence Agency?
It's really been getting to watch my workforce deliver for our customers and really have that focus on the mission. I've got a great organization, a great workforce. They are dedicated to the customers. And as I've gotten to travel around the world and watch them in action and talk to our customers who always appreciated the effort and the expertise and the ability that the team brought to bear, but being able to you know, hand out coins and hand out awards and really thank people for their service has probably been the highlight.
And I think the people, when I talk to CIOs, especially people like you who are moving on to a new job, that's what they seem to say, is the ability to work with great people and to meet a great mission. So you're not going to miss those calls at 3 a.m. asking why the network went down. You're not going to miss the morning meetings where you talk about the latest cybersecurity vulnerability. Those, you know, you'll still get some of that at OMB, right?
I'm guessing I'll get some of that at OMB, although it's less likely it'll be at 3 in the morning for me. And while I might have a little bit of withdrawal from, hey, all the power's out or we're going to turn the water off, I think I will be able to live with that part.
Very nice. You'll get some semblance of life back, but OMB is a whole different life. We are almost out of time. This has been a great conversation. Eventually, there'll be a new DIA CIO. I guess the two questions are who's going to be acting when you leave on October 3rd? And what advice do you have for that person, whether it's acting or eventually the permanent one?
There will be an acting CIO next week. Janice Glover-Jones, who's my deputy and been my deputy for a couple years, is going to be acting. So the organization's in great hands there. She's certainly capable of running it. My advice for the next CIO, about a year ago, I mentioned that I started having conversations with leadership about, you know, what am I going to do next? And there were really three things that at the time I said to myself, what do I need to shore up? And the three of them were, A, JWICS security. And so I would say cybersecurity and JWICS security, we've come a long way, and I think we're in a great place right now. However, I don't think any networks are ever secure. I just think they're more secure than they were before. And so that is a focus area that my successor is going to need to maintain. Readiness for EyeSight. You know, we're on the ODNI, Director Clapper's vision for EyeSight, and we're going down that path, and we need to maintain focus and really get that done, and I think we need to continue that. And then the third thing that I was focused on, and I think all three of these are really enduring, was the leadership team. And making sure that there's a leadership team, because it's so critical. You know, you talked earlier, Jason, we both talked about the people. You know, the leadership and the relationship with leadership is what drives the morale of an organization, and that's what drives the productivity of an organization. And so making sure that the leadership team is working collaboratively, that they're working with the workforce, that they're able to lead the workforce through, you know, tough transitions. There's going to keep being, you know, tough changes, and the budget doesn't look like it's going to get, you know, better, if you will, from a CIO perspective in the government. And the leadership team's got to be able to help drive that forward.
Very good advice, and we will look forward to your replacement, to whoever that person may be. And in the meantime, we will look forward to your new role over at the Office of Management and Budget. My guest today was Grant Schneider, the outgoing Chief Information Officer at the Defense Intelligence Agency. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Grant, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and good luck in your new role.
Jason, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure as always, and it's been great at DIA. I'm looking forward to OMB.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.